News Radio. Former Maricopa County Attorney Andrew Thomas says he pursued criminal allegations against Supervisor Don Stapley, but not for political means.
Because he was receiving $15,000 a month approximately from a convicted felon for various companies that he hadn't disclosed.
Republican Congressman David Schweikert supports a land exchange approved by the House that could pave the way for North America's largest copper mine to be built southeast of Phoenix.
When you think about this one ore deposit could represent 20% of the nation's copper. How can we even be debating this?
A new Rocky Mountain poll indicates a tight battle for Republican voters in Arizona.
Mitt Romney and Herman Cain are literally in a dead heat with about 24-25% each.
A head-to-head battle with President Obama shows the president would still win by at least 5 points. Cold storm moving through Arizona.
Temperatures will be falling. There'll be some lingering showers. The snow levels will be dropping with the cool air.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your KVNX traffic is a service of Exergen Temporal Thermometer. Say that 10 times as fast as you can. We have an injury accident Broadway Road east of Hardy. Also look for a collision Broadway Road just west of Hardy. So a lot of complications on Broadway Road. The Exergen Temporal Thermometer is quick, easy, and accurate, and affordable. And it's doctor recommended. Must have for any household, especially with children. That is the Exergen Temporal Thermometer.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, hope you like it. Low to mid-80s, daytime highs. We've waited a long time. Overnight lows now. Low 50s outlying areas, low 60s here in town. Sunny, dry, no rain in the forecast. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. KFNX News Time is 4:05. Currently in Midtown, we are at 79 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
I wish these dogs would sleep in for once. They wake up so early.
Know what else is early that we all need to wake up to? Medicare open enrollment.
How early?
Starts October 15th this year and ends on December 7th.
So it's time to review my health and prescription drug coverage.
If you're happy with your old Medicare plan, you don't need to do a thing. Or you might find a new plan with better coverage, higher quality, or less cost. You won't know unless you take a look.
Medicare open enrollment starts earlier this year. It's October 15th through December 7th. Call 1-800-MEDICARE or visit medicare.gov to compare and review Medicare plans.
Medicare gives you free cancer screenings, free annual wellness visits, and a 50% discount on brand name prescription drugs when you're in the donut hole. It's all part of the healthcare law.
Medicare open enrollment ends on December 7th. Learn more at 1-800-MEDICARE or medicare.gov. A message from Medicare and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
Well, Chet, in the legal world, that's what we refer to as a fraud. I'll never get tired of that joke. This is Jack Willinchek, not Dennis Willinchek. Dennis Willinchek is out of town. Today on the show, we'll be talking about prison sentencing reform. I have on the show, in studio, Representative Cecil Ash, also the Deputy Chief of the Maricopa County Adult Probation Department, Therese Wagner, and via phone, Judy Green from Justice Strategies, an advocacy group. You know, like Groucho Marx said, jail is no place for a young fellow. There's no room for advancement. We'll be talking on the show today about whether, I mean, everybody knows that the jail costs the state a lot of money. You know, this is a recession. We'll be talking about the various reasons for decreasing or even for decreasing jail sentencing and also the history to Arizona's jail. Sentencing laws. Maybe we'll start with that. Representative Ash, maybe you can tell us about the legislative history of Arizona's jail sentencing laws.
Well, that's a lot of material to cover. Basically, we should differentiate between jails and prisons. Prisons are the state system of incarceration, and jails are the used to be city and mostly county system of incarcerations now, so there is a difference. the main element of our history is that in prior to 1978, sentencing people to incarceration was handled mostly by judges, and they had the discretion to give whatever sentence they thought was appropriate. The legislature at the time felt that the judges were giving too lenient of sentences, and there was too much of a variance in the kinds of sentences. The same crime might get a different sentence in Coconino County than it got in Yuma County or Maricopa. And so in order to standardize the sentencing structure in Arizona, they formed a committee which came out with some mandatory sentencing scheme, a mandatory sentencing scheme that to some degree took away the discretion of judges. And there was still some discretion. If people went to trial, for example, they would receive anywhere in a given range. Say the sentence was 3 to 10 years, and the judge could give any area or any amount of time in that range.
Right.
But they also established a presumptive sentence, and they established and a presumptive sentence was the sentence you would get if there were no aggravating or mitigating circumstances, or if they balanced each other. If you had aggravating circumstances outweigh mitigating, maybe you would get an aggravated sentence, more on the 10-year sentence.
So before these statutes, there was no such thing as a presumptive sentence at all?
That's my understanding, yeah. Before 1978.
So part of it was, one, like you said, to establish more uniformity mm-hmm. to the way people were sentenced, but number two, also to make it a little bit tougher, because suddenly you have these presumptive sentences for any given crime.
Well, I don't know that it was necessarily tougher. They just wanted it to be uniform throughout the state.
Okay.
At that time, they felt like the judges had too much discretion.
Right. Okay. But since that time, the legislature has taken several steps to increase across the board. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, the legislature has enacted some statutes which, in essence, tie the judges' hands. They, for example, in sexual exploitation of a minor, the sentences, if there are more than one count, those counts have to, a sentence for those counts have to be served consecutively rather than concurrently. In other kinds of crime, mostly the judge could decree that someone serve a sentence concurrently for one count with a sentence for another count. So they changed that. And then the next big change was in 1994, they went to a truth in sentencing program. The federal government was giving the states some money if they would require defendants to serve 85% of their sentence. The federal government required that for the most serious offenses in Arizona, Class 1, 2, and 3 felonies. But our legislature went ahead and applied that to all six classes of felonies, the 4, 5s, and 6s, as well as the 1, 2, and 3s. Mm-hmm. And so everybody, in essence, now has to serve 85% of their sentence.
In other words, the idea of getting out on parole much earlier, you know, like, say, even a third of the time earlier, is no longer something you can do under the law.
That's correct. When I was a public defender, which was from 1990 to 95, the defendants I had, many times there would be an option, depending on the kind of offense, they would have flat time, which is day-for-day sentence, hard time, which was two-thirds of the sentence, and what we called soft time, which was 2 days for each 2 days credit for 1 day served, or you would serve 50% of your sentence, provided that you had good behavior and conducted yourself well while incarcerated.
Right. Is that something you're also seeking to change, the parole statutes?
Well, yes, it is. I think we need to go back to providing some incentives for the people in jail. Right now, if it doesn't matter how you conduct yourself, you're going to serve at least 85% of your sentence.
Right.
And I think we need to look at providing more education and more rehabilitation opportunities in prison, and give the inmates the incentive to take these courses and improve themselves and conform to the conduct that they should in order to get released early. And I think that incentive would be a great thing to have come back into the prison system.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the scary statistics out there. Ms. Green, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience.
No problem. We appreciate you coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got some statistics that I think came from you, from a report that you wrote called Turning the Corner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can, you know, maybe you'd like to tell us yourself. The Arizona Corrections Department currently costs taxpayers around $1 billion per year. Is that right?
Yeah, yes.
And that includes the costs of private prisons, too, does it?
It does.
Right. That's something that kind of struck me in doing some of the research for the show. People don't realize just how many private prisons we have. Let's see. Arizona has the highest proportion of people in prison of any state in the West and ranks sixth in the country. Do you believe that's correct?
That is correct. Arizona is really but outstanding for its toughness and its use of incarceration.
Wow. What would be like the top two states? Probably Texas, right? They're kind of notorious.
Texas, Louisiana.
And Louisiana. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, we should point out, too, that the United States incarcerates more people than any other country in the world.
Any other country in the world.
That includes Russia and China as well.
Wow. That's scary. And that's just in pure terms of numbers, right?
Yes, in percentage of population incarcerated.
Yeah. That's scary stuff. Let's see here. After peaking in October 2009 at just under 40,000 people in prison, Arizona's prison population has dropped by about 700 inmates. Officials say that changes in probation practices are sending fewer people back to prison for minor infringements on probation. We'll talk about that some more a little bit later in the show, about the things that, you know, that can be done and have been done to release that pressure on the jails, or I'm sorry, the prisons. I have to catch myself on that too. Like the representative pointed out earlier, mm-hmm. A jail is, you know, 1 year or less.
Correct.
If you're going to be there for longer, you go to a prison. That's the distinction in those two words. So despite the high incarceration rate, Arizona also has some of the highest crime rates in the country, averaging between sixth and seventh among all states in the District of Columbia over the past decade, according to FBI data. You know, we'll talk about that some more too. It's kind of the common, you know, assumption that you put people in jail for longer, you reduce crime. Not only is that, my understanding is not only is there not hard data to back that up, that there's actually some data that suggests that the longer you spend in prison, you know, the more likely you are to commit another crime. You know, it becomes like a school of crime. So we'll come back with all that right after the break. This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX 1100 AM.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Every day's a holiday in Healthy Habit Health Food Store, 6029 North 7th Street. Tune in to Healthy House Call discussing the latest breakthroughs of integrative medicine. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. and call with your questions, 602-266-1000. Discover world-class physicians, medical researchers, Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, and testimonials from our patients and consumers of natural products. Call 602-266-1000.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Bear down for Arizona football.
Touchdown, Arizona! How beautiful is that?
Catch the Cats scratching, clawing, and fighting for every victory all season long.
It is a touchdown, Arizona!
Join us Saturday, October 29th at 6:30 p.m. as Arizona takes on Washington. Don't miss a minute of the action on the exclusive home for Arizona football, the Arizona IMG Sports Network.
This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX 1100. Your regular host, Dennis Wilinchek, is out of town. Today on the show, we're talking about prison sentencing reform. My guests are State Representative Cecil Ash, also via phone, Judy Green from Justice Strategies, and also in the studio, the Deputy Chief of the Maricopa County Adult Probation Department, Therese Wagner. Before we went to the break, we're talking about just how severe the situation is. I'm sure, Representative Ash, you could tell us the most about that. That's why you're trying to change it.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most compelling reasons for changing the law, in your opinion?
Well, the most compelling reason is that we haven't had any changes, any significant changes since 1978, and we've only made things harsher. So as you said, we're leading the Western states in incarceration. Arizona has a population of just about 6.4 million. And the state of Washington has a population of about 6.5 million. We have 40,000 inmates. The last report I saw, it was like 40,080 inmates. It's been coming down slightly since I've been in the legislature. The state of Washington has 18,000 inmates. And so they're doing something different than we are. And many other states are, such as New York. New York has modified their sentencing laws, and they have not only reduced their incarceration, but they've reduced the rate of recidivism.
Right.
And I'm just saying that it's time for us to look at it again.
Right.
We haven't – the status quo is unacceptable. There have been many, many innovations, technological innovations. That I was at the probation department the other day, and Teresa showed me some of the things they're doing now technology-wise.
Like electronic monitoring.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you'd like to tell us a little bit about that, Teresa. Because I don't know. I've never heard of or seen anybody in Arizona using that electronic system. How widespread is it?
Well, we have generally two populations that we use electronic monitoring for. Actually, three, but we've got our pretrial release defendants who have not yet been convicted. So the higher profile, higher risk cases we place on electronic monitoring. They're on an ankle bracelet, and we can either know that, put them on curfew, and they're we know when they're coming and going from their house, or we can put them on a GPS bracelet, which tells us where they are in the community. We can kind of track their whereabouts in the community, and so that's been pretty effective for us. We have about 200, a little bit more than 200 cases on that.
Okay.
And then we have a second population that is our convicted sex offenders that are have to register, that they have to register, and they're a level three, meaning that they're a higher risk defendant.
Mm-hmm.
Based on an assessment, and so that's about I think we have about 150.
So total, what, like 350 people who are actually using that system?
Correct.
Sounds underused. Would you agree
with
that?
No, I think we've got it. Well, there's maybe some other small pockets in our agency. Those are mandated by statute mostly.
Right.
Some of the post-conviction, and then on the pretrial side, there's a slice of those folks that are mandated by statute. And then we use some, depending on how their release order is, they're placed on it. But on the post-conviction side, there might be smaller pockets of populations that we could utilize that on,
yeah.
But
okay.
It's a resource issue. And then
we've
got a continuous alcohol monitoring bracelet that we place on our DUI offenders that are in our DUI court for their first 90 days after release, which is the most critical time for them as they're coming out of jail or Department of Corrections and trying to get their life together.
Well, you said it's a cost issue, but it's certainly cheaper to, you know, equip somebody with one of these devices than it would be to house them in a prison, right?
It is, absolutely, yes.
Jack, one of the consequences of going to prison, I remember a case when I was a public defender. I had a lady who was a DUI defendant who was an escrow officer, and she was very functional in her business life and needed by her firm. But she ended up going to prison, I think, for 6 months. And, of course, if you're going to go to prison for 6 months, generally you're going to lose your house, your job, and your car. And when you get out, you are in bad shape financially. Right. And I think this alcohol monitoring bracelet is something that we can use to keep people employed. Anytime they violate that, they can go to jail or to prison, whatever it is. But it's a way to allow people to stay functional and not get behind the eight ball so much by losing their house, their car, and their job.
Right. Now, we talk so much about the cost of the state. You know, we forget, too, about the cost to the people, obviously, to, you know, mm-hmm. being sentenced to longer and getting longer sentences. You know, we touched on it a little bit earlier, and I think we should probably ask Judy Green about it a little bit, too, just the kind of success that other states have had with this. I know that to me, that's one of the most persuasive arguments for, you know, lowering our sentencing laws, because I think Texas has already tried this out and they've had some success. So, Judy, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. We've been tracking positive trends around the country for more than a decade. And the good news, of course, is that nationally, as well as in Arizona, crime is going down. And it seems to break the logical train between crime and incarceration, because increasingly over the decade, particularly since 2005, we are seeing an increasing trend towards prison populations going down. We like to call it downscaling or downsizing the prison populations. In 2006, nine states enjoyed reduced prison population. In 2007, there were 14 states that joined the trend. In 2008, there were 19 states. In 2009, which is the last year that we have national statistics for comparison, 24 states, virtually half of the country, saw reduced prison populations. And this is in the middle of a more than a decade trend of crime going down. Now, you mentioned the comparison with New York a few minutes ago. In Arizona, crime is going down. Violent crime was reduced by 10% between 2000 and 2008. But in New York, during the same period, roughly a decade, violent crime went down by 22%, and at the same time, the prison population fell by almost 20%, remarkable reduction. I can speak to some of the tools and techniques and strategies that have been followed in states in order to take advantage of the cost savings related to using evidence-based practices in corrections and
we
probation
touched upon
and parole.
A few of them.
But I want to say that most Arizonans may not know that the Maricopa County Adult Probation Department has been a leader in innovative practices and effective community supervision for more than two decades.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, maybe if you want to give us just a brief overview of, or, you know, maybe I should turn to Ms. Wagner here, who's been so responsible for innovating this field. Some of the things that we can do as opposed to jail time. We talked about parole a little bit. We talked about electronic monitoring. But what other options are there?
Well, as Judy was talking about, our agency has been on we've shifted gears about 10 years ago and started taking seriously the eight principles of evidence-based practices. And really, evidence-based practices is just using empirically proven methods to improve offender outcomes and reduce crime. I mean, it's pretty simple. So mm-hmm. taking what the research says and using that and really being able to evaluate your programs, and if they're not working, then that's not, you know, then eliminate those, and we frankly have done that. So we really started with getting a good assessment tool in place that helps us to really assess and classify who we have in front of us and sort the offenders out by what kind of risk are they presenting to the community to reoffending, and then what are their needs so we can help to reduce that risk.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about this, the evidence-based principles. So there are eight of them.
Yeah, so that would be the first one, really, is to do a good job up front of assessing individuals. So doing a triage and then sorting them out by risk.
Yeah.
So we have, in our agency, we sort them out into four different categories. We have a low-risk offender, medium-low, medium-high, and a high-risk offender. And then you want to begin engaging that offender effectively in their own future. So,
right. So
for that, that meant changing how we interact with people.
Right.
And then you want to be able to target what you do with those people. So in our assessment tool, there's about eight elements that we know that the research tells us we need to pay attention to that are going to either lead them towards crime or lead them away from crime, depending on where they fall in that. So, for example, I mean, their prior criminal history is a huge factor. Their attitudes and their thinking and their beliefs about crime, and so looking at how offenders think, because that's going to lead to their behavior, and then who they associate with are really the top three, and then of course there's the drug use, alcohol use, employment history, educational level, neighborhoods and families, so those kind of things. But really taking a look at those and the ones that they're showing higher scores in, then we want to take that and target them into services that are going to impact those areas of need.
Okay. Well, we come back from break. We got to take a break here in a few seconds. We'll talk about that some more. We'll also discuss again some of the compelling reasons to change the way we sentence criminals. Also, a little bit of the other side. Unfortunately, they're not very well represented here today. I guess I'm going to have to be the other side and have to play the prosecutor here. Some of the reasons that we hear for not changing sentencing. So this is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX.
CNN Radio. I'm Barbara Hall. The 12 lawmakers who make up the so-called Super Committee held a rare public meeting today. They're charged with finding more than $1 trillion to cut from the federal deficit before Thanksgiving. Michigan Congressman Dave Camp says they can't kick the can down the road.
I think we all feel how important this issue is, and frankly, the country spent more than it's had for 50 years. This is just not a new thing, but we're at a crisis point, and I think the preview is what we're seeing in Greece and Europe, and we don't want to go in that direction.
Republicans blocked a Democratic proposal to cut $3 trillion from the deficit because it relied heavily on tax increases. Bernie Madoff's wife says she and her husband attempted suicide after his Ponzi scheme was exposed. The interview will air on 60 Minutes Sunday. After nearly 4 months, the body of a missing skydiving instructor has been found in Utah. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio.
We cannot afford unintended consequences with this land deal.
That's Tucson Democrat Raul Grijalva. The House approves a land exchange that could pave the way for North America's largest copper mine to be built southeast of Phoenix. Former Maricopa County Attorney Andrew Thomas said he had concerns about corruption involving some county supervisors.
The supervisors and other county officials were just openly thumbing their nose at the law, in my opinion.
Opponents say he had political motives. The current County Attorney Bill Montgomery, dismayed with the disappearance of 5-year-old Jessie Shockley 2 weeks ago from her Glendale home.
We're monitoring it. We work in partnership with law enforcement, and we're assisting where we can offer assistance.
A Yuma police sergeant fired for using his position to demand sex in exchange for help.
We obviously have to uphold that public trust, and we strive very hard to do so.
Phoenix police quickly nab a bank robbery suspect. Money spread throughout the neighborhood. George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your KFNX traffic, a service of the 99 Cent Only Stores. Look for a disabled vehicle blocking the right shoulder southbound Loop 101 at baseline. Also, we do have another collision southbound State Route 143, and that's at I-10. That's going to be a bugaboo on your way out this afternoon. 99 Cent Only Stores has fresh pumpkins for only 99.99 cents each. Nothing screams Halloween like a fresh Halloween pumpkin. Get your pumpkins today at the 99 Cent Only Store. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, hope you like it. Low to mid-80s, daytime highs. We've waited a long time. Overnight lows now. Low 50s outlying areas, low 60s here in town. Sunny, dry, no rain in the forecast. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we're at 79 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
I have the answer. Call me for this link and you will call me back. I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient-dense, locally grown produce and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma Culture is our name and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601.
Are you interested in a consultation with Dr. Kondrat or one of his three-day programs? His three-day program is the best way to help you regain your vision loss. This comprehensive program includes an extensive diagnosis based on homeopathic principles, daily lectures on the essentials to improve your vision, and 3 days of intensive treatments. Take this important step now. Call 1-800-430-9328 to learn more about this special program. His three-day program is the best way to help you regain your vision loss. Call 1-800-430-9328.
Have your voice heard. Tune into the Savage Nation, weekdays from 5 to 7, only on KFNX.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is your host, Jack Wilencheck. Your regular host, Dennis Wilencheck, is out of town. Today on the show, we're talking about prison sentencing reform. And I believe we have a caller on the line, Lane from Mesa. Lane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and tell us what's on your mind.
I've had some communication with some of the women prisoners over in Perryville, and recently picked somebody up. Now, my understanding is that the Department of Corrections over in Perryville, which, by the way, is where Marsha Powell died of heat exhaustion or heat stroke a few years ago, and, of course, no one was punished, my understanding is that over there in Perryville, they provide no rehabilitation whatsoever. And when prisoners are released, they're released with the clothes on their back, and that's it. Now, the prison's out in a rural area. There's no public transportation. I think they do give them a ride to the bus line, you know, up on Thomas or something like that. But, I mean, how are prisoners supposed to go straight and get a job and do all that stuff if they're released with only the clothes on their back?
Right.
And have no rehabilitation or education services to speak of there.
Right. You know, it's funny, just over the break, I was talking to these guys about that. You know, I've got a couple members of my family, you know, my cousins, who have been in and out of jail their whole lives, in and out of prison and jail their whole lives, and it seems to me that's always the problem. It's like they get out, they've got no support structure in place. They have no skills to speak of except for the fact that, you know, they know how to steal things. So well, let me turn to you guys. What's your response to that?
Well, there are many states around the country that not only
have invested in more programs in within their prison systems to prepare people for reentry. And the improvement, as Ms. Wagner was talking about, of community supervision, not just on probation, but also post-prison supervision or parole. But one of the ways that those investments are paying off in terms of actually saving taxpayer money is creation of earned time and merit release programs. Like Representative Ash said, you need incentives to make get the prisoners to really bear down and invest their time and energy in those constructive ways of doing time, education, substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, et cetera. Maritime is saving hundreds of millions of dollars in New York State, for example, by allowing people to earn their way out of prison. And you know, community really benefits, and taxpayers benefit in their pocketbook.
Okay.
I think it's incorrect to say there's no rehabilitation programs or no educational programs. There are some, but there is insufficient for the prison population that we have, and many people never get the opportunity to participate in those programs. So those need to be expanded. Lane is correct. Sometimes people are dropped off on the street corner in Phoenix in the middle of the night with $50 in their pocket, and these are inmates who are finally released. Maybe they've completed their term, and we somehow expect them to become productive citizens. And most of us, even with good educations, couldn't do that. There are about 27 professions where you cannot get a license or a job in if you have a felony on your record. So they already start out on that street corner with a significant disadvantage that they can't get into 27 different professions. And we need to look at that, too, because there are some professions where it doesn't matter whether you've had a felony or not. Obviously, if you're a bank teller and you have a theft in your background, that's different. But, for example, barbers, a barber with a DUI, is not allowed to be a barber anymore. He's not entitled to that license because he has a felony DUI.
Okay.
Jack, if I could just talk about one of the programs. We've got a federal grant that deals directly with reentry issues. We have a lot of DOC inmates coming out of prison onto a probation grant. So we got a grant that gave us some resources that we are able to go in and start that reentry process before the inmate gets released, so we can work with them intensively before they get out, and as they're out the door their first 90 days, which is the highest risk time for any inmate coming out of custody, transitioning to the community. And we saw, just for one statistic for you, that our absconder rates prior to that grant being implemented were about 27% of the anybody coming out of prison was absconding. We've got that down to 3% now. So we've seen tremendous impact on that population and helping to walk them through transitioning back into the community and providing them all the resources that Judy was talking about.
Okay. So, well, I guess the short answer to Lane's question is, they have to work with programs or with agencies like yours, or is
Well, people need support systems. Many of them, and they're coming out. The world's changing rapidly, and they're, as Representative Ash stated, there's a lot of barriers with trying to find employment, housing. Many of them have mental health issues, and just the marginalization of having that DOC record. Lots of barriers, and they need support.
Yeah. Well, I guess getting back to, the main topic for the show, would it help with this at all if we put people in there for less time? I mean, are there statistics that show that the less time you spend in jail, the easier time you have when you get out of it, I guess is what it comes down to.
Well, we ought to consider other alternatives besides incarceration. I mean, we can still find people, and they're... I've talked to a number of people, the representative from Texas who is in charge of helping them to avoid building another $750 million in prisons. Jerry Madden is his name, Representative Madden. And I've talked with inmates who have gotten out of prison, and they all say the same thing. They say about 20% of the people in prison should never be let out. They're where they're supposed to be. And he said that they from various sources, they say about 20% should never be in there.
Hmm.
And yeah. then the other 60%, it depends on what we do with them while they're in, what kind of opportunities, what kind of vocational training we can give them, because they can get out and become productive citizens if we give them the right tools to work with. Mm-hmm. There is that element that deserves to be there. We don't want them out. They're a threat to the public at all times.
Right.
But the others, you know, if someone commits a crime in which nobody is physically hurt or financially hurt, why do they need to go to prison? Why can't we find them or have them do community service?
Do something like this electronic monitoring, which still
exactly.
seems to me.
Again,
yeah.
and I think it goes back to what kind of risk are they to the community? And we, you know, and that's the question that we need to, you know, we have to kind of look at our philosophy regarding this whole crime issue and public safety. Our mission is long-term behavioral change. That's what we're seeking. Yeah. Because we believe if we help somebody change their life, we're not going to see them again. And they're going to be a contributing tax-paying citizen.
Yeah.
There's many folks, if they're low risk, a fine and send them on their way is probably the best route to go. And we have, you know, statistics that show very good outcomes with that kind of approach. And then the middle group that Representative Ash was talking about is the group that you really want to put your resources into and
right.
help reduce crime, change their lives, and that's going to impact their children. And then there's that high-risk group that probably we all agree need yeah. to be contained or incapacitated.
Right. Well,
the good news from research is that shortening time behind bars doesn't increase recidivism, a good example of a state that has some characteristics similar to Arizona of shortening time behind bars comes from Mississippi, which is certainly a red state, and as I mentioned before, passed a truth in sentencing law requiring that everyone do 85% of the sentence imposed by the courts back in 1994. Mississippi, a couple of years ago, revamped that specifically to reflecting what we know about the effectiveness of treatment rather than incarceration for people with substance abuse problems, drugs and alcohol. And so they reinvented parole for drug offenders in Mississippi and made a very broad span of prisoners parole eligible again. People who were sentenced
right,
to do
right.
85% of their time are now eligible for parole for drug crimes, including sales of, say, for example, up to 2 ounces of cocaine.
Yeah.
They're now parole eligible after doing 25% of their sentence, and giving them a real incentive to seek treatment before they're released and after.
Right.
And, you know, nobody would include... Would accuse Mississippi or Haley Barbour of being, you know, liberal or
yeah, really.
Democratic or...
All right, we have to take a break here in a moment. But, you know, for the last segment of the show, when we come back, I definitely want to talk about whether we could, you know, I mean, you hear about these things in other states, you know, the electronic monitoring, the, you know, giving people parole a little bit earlier. It really struck me doing the research for the show that we don't do those things. I mean, it's, you know, we have 300 people in the whole state who have, like, electronic monitoring devices. So we'll come back in a few minutes and talk about that. This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX.
A righty on the left coast. The Lars Larson Show. Weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Healthline. Join me to get your nutrition and health-related questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. This month, the real vitamin C is on special. Quantum C Complex is an antioxidant. It promotes healthy adrenals, collagen tissue, and immunity. Imagine, ascorbic acid alone is called vitamin C, yet it can be quickly oxidized and as such is a free radical. Without bioflavonoid cofactors, it may not be reduced or unoxidized. Not so in our Quantum C Complex. Get the real Vitamin C Complex. Buy two bottles, get the third one free. Call us at 800-370-3447. 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall, every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Afraid of high car repair bills? Would a $4,500 engine replacement hurt your savings?
Just a little?
Cover America Auto wants to give you a free quote on peace of mind protection. If your car breaks down, we'll pay the repair shop on covered repairs directly. No waiting for reimbursement. No hassle. If you're driving without coverage or if your warranty is about to expire, call us. You can trust you will be protected. Our claims department has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau with 50 years of dependability.
I just brought my car in, had the transmission replaced, and they paid the bill.
Plus, our direct-to-the-public rates can save you thousands off of what dealers may charge. Call for your free, no-obligation quote now at 800-681-1793. 800-681-1793. 24-hour roadside assistance and rental cars included on most plans. Don't wait. Call for your free quote now. 800-681-1793. 800-681-1793.
Lou Dobbs, afternoons at 1 on KFNX.
This is Jack Wilenchek on KFNX. Today we're talking about prison sentencing reform. We had a caller call up a little bit back, too, to just express some general, angst about the way the prison system works. And, you know, I said on the air, I feel the same way. It's, people go in and they just keep going back in. Part of the solution, it seems to me, would be to get a little bit more creative with it. And we were talking to my guests today are Teresa Wagner, who's a deputy chief of the Maricopa County Adult Probation Department. Also in the studio is State Representative Cecil Ash. And on the phone is Judy Green, a criminologist. Part of the solution seems to me that we should get a little bit more creative with it, have more electronic monitoring. You were saying before there's like a negligible number of people in the state who have electronic monitoring devices. But another question here is, if this has been proven to work, and we've been hearing that other states it has been, even very conservative states like Texas and Mississippi, then what's stopping Arizona from doing the same thing? I'll turn to you, Representative Ash, for an answer to that.
Well, there needs to be a public outcry against the status quo. And so far, the legislature has not perceived that to be the case. I sponsored 8 bills last session that had to do with reforms in the criminal justice system. None of them got to the floor of the House. And so the public needs to let their legislators and their senators and representatives know that they believe changes need to be made. It's inappropriate to just continue with the status quo. When someone says they don't see any changes are necessary in the system, that means they're just putting a rubber stamp on what was done in 1978. And we've had changes in science and in our transportation. Our roads have been improved. We've had changes in education and more are coming. It's time to look at what other states have done that are successful, have been successful, and glean from those other states the successes and implement them in our state. We will save money. We will lower our recidivism rates, and the public will be even more protected and safer than they are now.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of the groups that are lobbying against something like this, number one, you got the county attorney. He's opposed to this.
Yeah, correct? He's basically opposed. Now, I've met with Mr. Montgomery, and I have a lot of respect for him, and he's a very bright and articulate person. We are going to work with him to provide more diversion up front so that people don't get into the criminal justice system in the first place, and he's been very cooperative. But that's a matter of expanding his current power, and you wouldn't expect him to object to that. But I think he still feels like the existing sentencing structure is okay. Mm-hmm. And I think other states have proven that not to be the case. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they say is, well, we need these harsh crimes for deterrence. But most people don't know what the sentences are right for the various crimes. I'm an attorney, and I couldn't tell you, other than murder, everybody pretty much knows what that is.
That's a great point. I mean, before somebody goes out and commits a crime, he's not picking up a statute book and, checking the chart and, I might get some, another 2 years for that one. I might not do that.
There are crimes in Arizona that if you commit, you will end up, a man in Payson, a 73-year-old man, was just sentenced to 90 years. That's for 9 counts, 10-year minimum sentence on each count. They have to be served consecutively. That same crime is a misdemeanor in the state of Ohio and a misdemeanor in the state of California. But we make it a Class 2 felony here with a minimum sentence of 10 years. It's just unconscionable that we subject people to that. And then we end up paying for their families. The families end up going on access, on welfare of one sort or another. And the public needs to come forward and say, this isn't acceptable. We need to move on this.
Yeah. That's the other side to it. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, we'll be tougher on crime. But the other side is, well, number one, are we really getting tougher on crime when we just put people in prison longer? I think we've heard today a lot of statistics that say that's not the case. And number two, I mean, yeah, there's a tremendous cost to this. I've got a whole page of statistics about that. You know, it's I know that we're at this point we're paying more for corrections than we are for higher education. You know, like something like was it $1 billion per year in the Arizona budget.
The only, if I could interject here, Jack, the only significant change that's been made in our criminal justice system in the last couple decades has been the Safe Communities Act, which was passed in 2008. And we've looked at the statistics on that. In the last 2 years, they've reduced referrals, the probation departments. And this is a real success of Arizona's probation program, and they're to be complimented for this. They've reduced referrals to prison by 28%. In the last 2 years. So the reductions in our prison population that you've seen, which is only about 400 or 500 people in the last 3 years, most of those are, I believe, are attributable to the 28% reduction by the probation office through the Safe Communities Act. And yet there was a lot of opposition to that act, but it's proven to be a great success.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is a recession, you know, it's I think that's the argument that people get most uncomfortable with, is that we're just cutting costs. But it does a lot more than that.
Well, we need to be using our money more wisely. We need to be smart on crime and not just try and be tough on crime.
Exactly.
To go back to examples from other conservative states, or neighboring states, your neighbor Colorado it was experiencing overcrowding and a increased prison population boom. Up until a couple of years ago, two or three years ago in Colorado, the prison population was increasing by 100 prisoners per month on average. Now, that's the equivalent of needing to build and activate a new prison every year. So they set up a criminal justice reform commission to study what was, you know, producing, you know, out-of-control costs in the prison budget. And involving district attorneys as well as correctional officials and probation and public members, reform advocates, and over the span of the last 2 years, they've now reached a situation where the prison population is reduced at an average of 34 people a month. They've closed four prisons, two public prisons and two private prisons. Just reaching back briefly to the Mississippi example, after Mississippi changed its parole law for drug offenders so that people could become eligible for parole after doing only 25% of their sentence, in less than 6 months, the parole board granted parole for some 3,000 prisoners in Mississippi. Crime continued to go down, and there was no public outcry whatsoever.
Wow. That's pretty persuasive. Mm-hmm. Seems to me like that's one little step that we could start with, is just bring back the parole boards. You know, we don't even have to change up all the sentencing guidelines. I mean, that's just one little thing we could do. It's very discretionary. You know, we still have a lot of the boards making their determinations. That's something we could start with.
Well, we need to give them more options, obviously, but the statutes will have to be changed to make people eligible for parole.
Right.
And that's the big change that needs to go forward.
Exactly.
And we also need to put a lot of more emphasis, I think, on prevention and education in crime. And I agree with Mr. Montgomery that those are two things he's working on, and I support him in that program.
Yeah, on that note, I saw kind of a morbid statistic here that when the state of Arizona projects how many prison beds it will need, it factors in the number of kids who read well in the fourth grade. I guess that's a predictor for whether or not they'll become criminals.
Well, that's one reason we passed 2 years ago a statute that requires kids to read by the third grade, or they can't move on to the fourth grade. So we're trying to make sure that everybody can read by that time.
Now, clearly, this is something we should be tackling at all ends. But what we've been talking about today is that it's not something that the knee-jerk solution is necessarily the right solution. Just putting it in there for longer is the right thing to do. We've got a couple minutes here, just on the subject of how dire, I guess, the situation is. I saw recently that Arizona is now charging a $25 visitation fee to visitors to state prisons. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have, and that was a real problem, I thought, in the it was part of the entire budget package, and unfortunately, they implemented that. The Department of Corrections felt they had to do it, but that's really a travesty on the families who many of whom, I mean, in many cases, they've lost their provider, and $25 to them is a significant charge. And some of these people will drive down from another place. I heard of a family that drove down from Sholo to the Perryville prison, and they got there, and they were denied entry. Mm-hmm. And these kinds that we need to recognize that community support, family support is important to these prisoners, and we need to facilitate that process rather than hinder it.
That's like the vicious cycle here. You know, we're running out of the money, so we can't really provide to these people what they need. But that's a topic for another show. All right, this is Jack Wilenschuk and KFNX. I want to thank all of my guests today, Representative Cecil Ash, Ms. Therese Wagner, as well as Judy Green, thank you. I apologize, Ms. Green.
Well, thank you, Jack. I'm really
thank you so much.
Been able
Thanks
to
a lot.
It's good to be here.
Thank you for everybody. Next week, Dennis Wilenschuk will be back on the air. This is Jack Wilenschuk signing off.
Thursdays at noon, the Makeover Advice Show with me, Diane Faith, the insider's guide to beauty for both men and women. Thursdays at noon, too fabulous to miss. Makeover,
makeover. At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to keep harmful secondhand smoke out of our public spaces and workplaces. And fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. We're fighting for a day when kids no longer battle airborne poisons in their own homes or the fear of an asthma attack. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air, we're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing. And we can use your help. Join us in the fight. Visit fightingforair.org and read about just a few of the many ways the American Lung Association is fighting to protect the air we breathe, both indoors and out. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, Cape Creek, Phoenix, the home of Lou Dobbs, weekdays at 1 p.m. on KFNX. KFNX.